Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Papp joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, coral reef restoration shows amazing promise in Indonesia. NASA sends another message in a bottle into space. And the well-known space organization now has its own tabletop RPG game. Plus, this day in history, the first .com domain is scooped up. That's coming up on Cool Stuff. Well, here's some good news to take with you into the weekend. A new study published in the peer-reviewed journal Current Biology suggests coral reefs damaged by things like climate change, be it acidic ocean water or strong storms, can be artificially restored over a period of just 4 years. The scientists behind this study were part of the Mars Assisted Reef Restoration System, an all-encompassing program utilizing a hexagonal structure known as a reef star. Essentially, it's a strong metal platform that's affixed to the seafloor on which outplanted coral can grow. Per the website, the team at Mars carefully chooses sites around the world where restoration is both necessary and appropriate, while working with local communities to establish sustainable programs. They also monitor the restored reefs regularly to ensure a positive whole ecosystem impact. In this case, the restored reef was located in South Sulawesi, Indonesia, hopefully I'm doing that some justice, as I like to say, at one of the largest restoration projects in the world. This particular site was turned from a colorful reef to rubble 30 to 40 years ago, but not from climate change. In this case, it was dynamite fishing, which, as you can probably imagine, is absolutely horrible for the surrounding ecosystem and a huge threat to healthy coral reefs. The practice itself is banned in many parts of the world, but remains active in Southeast Asia. As part of their findings, the research team noted the restored reef was indistinguishable from healthy control sites. So what exactly is happening here? Well, carbonate budgets are defined as the balance between calcium carbonate production and erosion in a reef, and that budget can ultimately influence a reef's ability to provide important geoecological functions. Carbonate production itself is driven by the abundance and size of the coral colonies present. Per Inez Lang of the University of Exeter in the UK, quote, "Corals constantly add calcium carbonate to the reef framework while some fishes and sea urchins erode it away. So calculating the overall carbonate budget basically tells you if the reef as a whole is growing or shrinking. Positive reef growth is important to keep up with the sea level rise, protect coastlines from storms and erosion, and provide habitat for reef animals," end quote. And 4 years after the coral transplantation onto the site's reef stars, net carbonate budgets tripled, again, making them indistinguishable from healthy control sites. Perhaps the only disadvantage to artificial restoration is that because branch coral is preferred for these types of things, that's a particular species of coral, by the way, the overall species diversity is lower in restored reefs than natural ones. Again, per Lang, quote, "The speed of recovery that we saw was incredible. We did not expect a full recovery of reef framework production after only 4 years," end quote. Tim Lamont, a study co-author at the Lancaster University Environment Center in the UK, points out that while additional observation and assessment of restored reefs is needed, meaning let's give this thing more time and see what it looks like, this particular success seems to illustrate that if humanity can stabilize the climate, we have the tools to undo some of the damage that climate change has brought on coral reefs, an integral part of the ecosystem, not just underwater, of course, but on land as well. Per the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, coral reefs protect coastlines from storms and erosion, provide jobs for local communities, and offer opportunities for recreation. They're also a source of food for both humans and marine life, and new medicines. Fish and other organisms shelter, find food, reproduce, and rear their young in the many nooks and crannies formed by corals. So, hey, Reg, if nothing else, I hope this makes you feel a little bit better heading off into the Saturday-Sunday coming up.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's good to know there's ways to try to repair the damage that has been done, whether it be from mankind or, as you said, some of the sea life taken away the healthy parts of the coral reef there. But yeah, it's good to see. And, you know, I still have at some point to, you know, visit somewhere where I can see the coral reef, although my lack of ability to swim may hurt on that.
Yeah, that would probably be a key factor in that. I don't know. You're not selling me. You're kind of like, yeah, I guess it does. That's good to hear.
I mean, well, I don't know what you want me to say. It's way to go, guys.
Way to go, Coral.
Super work. Keep it up.
Cool stuff.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Well, you may recall hearing Reggie and I chatting about the space probes Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 last week. For some more context, back in 1977, scientists blasted the pair into space as part of a mission to study our solar system. And as of today, both probes are approximately 15 billion miles from Earth. That's more than three times the distance from Earth to Pluto. Now, despite being a long ways from their origination point, it will take another 40,000 years before the probes encounter another planetary system. But they aren't entirely alone on their journey. Each contains a golden record aboard intended as a message in the event one of the probes is eventually found by intelligent life forms outside our solar system, of course.
Well, that's nice to know they have some music to listen to along the way, because I think they have some songs on it. So if they get bored, they just, you know, spin the tunes, right?
Or listen to humans laugh, maybe the sea breeze. A lot of sound effects from what I'm getting on this as well. Dr. Carl Sagan and other members of a NASA committee assembled the golden records as a way to portray life on Earth in the form of sounds and images, including spoken greetings in 55 different languages, all of which can be found on NASA's SoundCloud account if you're interested. It also contains samples of other human sounds like laughter, music, and nature sounds, such as animal calls and weather patterns. Those details provided via the United Nations website. I don't know, Reg, if I was, look, I consider myself, I guess I'd be intelligent life, right? If I found something like this, I don't know that I would have any clue what to do with these greetings in 55 different languages that I don't recognize and some foreign sounds of animals that I may or may not even be able to grasp the concept of.
It's funny that you say that, because I was thinking the same thing, that if I had a turntable or anything to put this on, and I start playing it, I'd be like, what is this? I don't understand what's going on here. Why are all these random sounds? What is this?
I'm picturing an alien finding this thing, listening to it, and being like, well, this is a piece of junk, and just trashing it. I don't get any of this. What is this? Went through all this trouble to get a record player. Oh, my God. What is the deal? Yeah, I guess you're hoping not only does it find intelligent life, but it also finds its way to someone who is, you know, top
curious?
Of the food chain when it comes to intelligence. Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to find their version of Dr. Carl Sagan to really, I would assume, figure out what's going on here. At the time of the Voyager's launch, Dr. Sagan said, quote, "This spacecraft will be encountered and the record played only if there are advanced spacefaring civilizations in interstellar space. But the launching of this bottle," in quotes, "into the cosmic ocean," also in quotes, "says something very hopeful about life on this planet," end quote. Well, fast forward to present day, and scientists are now blasting another message in a bottle to space to potentially communicate with intelligent life that is stumbled upon. But it also helps raise awareness for NASA's Europa Clipper mission amongst us humans here on Earth. So I'd say the latter is probably the more important bit to this. The Europa Clipper spacecraft will carry a message in the form of an inscribed plaque when it launches this October and heads towards Jupiter's moon Europa. By the way, that's the Clipper's primary mission, to study Europa through a series of flybys. But why not have a little fun along the way? Per GNN, on one side of the plaque is an engraving of U.S. Poet Laureate Ada Limón's handwritten work In Praise of Mystery, a poem for Europa, along with a picture of a bottle bobbing in the ocean, at the center of which sits a silicon microchip stenciled with more than 2.6 million names submitted by the public. That last bit's the part that helped raise public awareness. NASA undertook the Message in a Bottle campaign, which could have just as easily been called the Send Your Name to Space campaign. Last summer, they did this by inviting people from around the world to send their names as signatories to Limón's poem. So that sounds like plagiarism, Reg.
Well, and I find interesting is I read a little bit on the story. That microchip, like, these are very smallly etched. Like I don't think the human eye can see the etchings on these, can it?
Well, with that many names, I'm not really sure how you could possibly do that without having a massive piece of metal to send up there. So we keep giving these aliens riddles to solve in the event they find these things.
That these aliens are going to need to know to look in like an extremely powerful microscope or something. Be like, there's Tom. I see him.
Well, I guess Tom wanted to say hello from another planet. We should go investigate. Above the poem, the artwork also includes a longhand engraving of the Drake equation, which was formulated by astronomer Frank Drake in 1961. To estimate the possibility of finding advanced civilizations beyond Earth.
I thought for sure you're going to say it was a Drake equation as a song. Oh, I'm so disappointed.
Not this time. Nope. Okay. Very well could be. To the left of the poem is a portrait of one of the founders of planetary science, Ron Greeley, whose early efforts to develop a Europa mission 2 decades ago laid the foundation for this Europa Clipper. And in between these sits a visual representation of the radio frequencies considered plausible for interstellar communication, symbolizing how humanity uses this radio band to listen for messages from the cosmos. On the other side, linguists collected recordings of the word water, spoken in 103 languages, from families of languages around the world. The audio files were then converted into waveforms and etched into the plate. If you're wondering why, Europa shows strong evidence of an ocean under its icy crust, with more than twice the amount of water of all of Earth's oceans combined, hence the choice of words here. The plaque itself is made of a metal called tantalum and about 7 by 11 inches or 18 by 28 centimeters. This is just the most recent message NASA plans to blast into the cosmos. So I don't know. It's cool. More than anything, I think it's celebratory and a way to raise awareness for we humans here on Earth, because as we have constantly said, Reg, if any alien out there is able to figure this out and understand what it is we're trying to communicate, well, good on them. And they are probably a heck of a lot smarter than us humans, and we should probably be scared of that.
Well, by the time it gets to them, I don't know if mankind's going to be around on Earth anymore, because we have to first travel to them. If we put in their ways of our communication, which would be radio band, that's going to take an extremely long time to get back to us. And as for the water, I get it. That's kind of cool to see, you know, the waveforms, but I don't know if that's going to translate, because it really depends on how other, I guess, species communicate. Their waveforms might be totally different than our waveforms. They might have clicking sounds. You never know. It's kind of interesting, but I am glad to see they decided to go beyond the record and do like a microchip in some way. As we get more advanced, you know, these aliens are going to come and seem like, oh, okay, so I guess we don't need this turntable anymore. Let's pull out the computer and then we'll just keep going until we advance on.
Ever since you started talking, I have the song In the Year 2525 in my head, Zager and Evans.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
If man is still alive.
Well, even if we are still alive, our population may be spread out throughout the cosmos by the time anything returns to us.
Dibs on Orion's belt. I've always wanted to see what that thing looked like up close as I burn alive in nanoseconds.
You don't have to go to the actual star. You can see if there's any planets orbiting those stars.
There you go.
Speaking of NASA and traveling the cosmos, do you have a fascination with science and the love of the tabletop RPG games?
Of course. Okay. A love of science and tabletop RPG games. Well, probably more so science, I find fascinating.
NASA did do a Venn diagram and found there is a lot of overlap between the two.
Oh, a Venn diagram. Always down for a good Venn.
They never lie either. Well, NASA actually just created their own game that is designed for that specific person in mind. They launched a 90-second video promoting the game called The Lost Universe, starting with it saying, "What happens when you combine the game that changed the world with the telescope that changed the world."
Is this in the movie preview guy's voice?
No, they didn't actually have a voice. I'm just throwing that in.
Oh, they should.
In a world where you have a game,
you should try out.
According to the website that NASA set up for the game, the premise is, quote, "A dark mystery has settled over the city of Adastron on the rogue planet of Exlaris. Researchers dedicated to studying the cosmos have disappeared, and the Hubble Space Telescope has vanished from the Earth's timeline. Only an ambitious crew of adventurers can uncover what was lost. Are you up to the challenge?
And from the Earth's timeline? So we're traveling through time and space now.
That is right, yes. Mm. So you're all over the place here. Now, the game is designed for 4 to 7 players to embark on this quest, with the characters being levels 7 through 10. Plus, you should know or be able to learn a few science skills during the game. Now, if you want to play, the game is actually free. They have everything from the instructions to a map available to download on the game website, which, by the way, you can see linked in the show notes. So, Marcus, are you ready for a game of The Lost Universe?
You know what? I would play this. This sounds intriguing. Although, I have to admit, I'm hearing a little bit of where in the world is Carmen Sandiego when you describe it. Although it's
where in the world, no, where
it's more like where in the universe
is the Hubble.
Yes, exactly.
Which would be where in the universe and time is the Hubble.
That's right. Didn't they make a where in time is Carmen Sandiego too?
They may have. I mean, you got to keep expanding. You can only go where is she for so long. You go when is she? You know, I've only got to play Dungeons & Dragons once in my life. I was invited over to a friend's house. We spent the night. We had a bunch of us there. We played the game. And they must not have liked the way I played because I was never invited back.
I have never played Dungeons & Dragons. Nothing against it, but just never had the opportunity. More of the RPG games I think of, I guess, are video games. Like, I could sit and play any one of the Legend of Zelda games all day. Does that count?
I like my Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, all of those. I play those. But yeah, the tabletop, I just, nobody ever invites me. Maybe that says more about me than anything else.
It's okay, Reggie. You're always welcome here on Cool Stuff.
Ooh, thank you.
On your own podcast.
It's like my wife saying, you're welcome to come home sometimes.
Sleep in the bed.
Yeah. Taking a look at this day in history, on March 15th, 1985, the first registered .com domain was acquired by Symbolix, which I feel like is kind of symbolic. Well, so Symbolix Inc. is a computer manufacturer from Cambridge, Massachusetts. The company was founded by Russell Notsker, which obviously he must have been a good foresight to be one of the first dot-coms out there, you know, kind of a trendsetter here. It took until November 30th, though, of 1987 before 100 domains were actually registered. So, what, over 2 years for 100 of them to be registered. Now, technically, this wasn't the first registered domain. That belongs to Nordic Infrastructure for Research and Education, but they had a .net, Nordru.net, which they registered on January 1st of 1985. So the Symbolix was the first .com, which, as we know, is probably the more common domain that people like to have. As of 2022, there were about 351 registered domain names with about 33,000 per day. So think about that. It took 2 years for 100 to be registered. Now there's 33,000 per day.
Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of technical advancements. I mean, think about Bitcoin, for example. I remember when that first became a thing and you're hearing about a select number of technically savvy people who are mining for it going, is this really worth your time? Is there going to be any value to this thing? And then you fast forward a few years and suddenly you've got thousands of people and then you got hundreds of thousands of people and it just takes off from there.
Yeah, and I never did mine. Just even having one Bitcoin would be nice to have right now.
Yeah, well, I don't think I was smart enough to be out there mining from my understanding of what it takes to be able to do that.
So as I mentioned, most of the domains out there are .coms. In fact, 53% of them are .com, so which is way above the rest, with .org and .ru being around 4% of registered names. So they're the second highest. Nearly 1,600 domain extensions are available. So when I talk about that .org, .net, .ru, I'm talking about, you know, the ending there. There's over 1,600 of those extensions out there. And the disappointing part for me right now, domains were free until 1995. And it has been reported that the most expensive public domain sold was in 2007. R.H. Donnelly bought business.com for $345 million. Although supposedly cars.com was purchased in 2015 for $872 million, but that transaction wasn't made public, so it's not confirmed. Google.com was accidentally sold in 2015 for $12. And then Google offered to buy it back for $6,006.13, kind of a very specific number. I'm not sure why. But when they found out the person that bought it was going to donate the money to charity, they doubled that price. Still seems kind of low, $12,000 for the Google.com domain, but
it does. Although Google wasn't the Google we know today at that point.
Yeah, but still, think about that. If you had that now, if you would have just kept holding on to that. That person could have made a lot of money for charity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it does make me wonder. I mean, you reference cars.com. You got to really want cars.com specifically.
Yeah.
To buy it at that price. I guess in my head, I go, I know that it's simple. I get that there's value and ease in marketing, but couldn't you have done like buycars.com or something adjacent to that? And I don't know, maybe those were taken as well and would have cost money. So they just said, take the best one available. But wow, that's a lot of cash to turn over before you can even start building your website.
Yeah, well, I mean, the domain industry is now expected to be worth around $8 billion. And GoDaddy actually released a video about, you know, flipping those domain names. They do say some people make hundreds of thousands of dollars doing that, you know, buying, like you said, a cars.com and hoping you sell it for a large price. They said most people average, you know, around a $100 to $1,000 profit for the domains if they, you know, buy them and try to sell them, with some people actually losing money because you may buy the domain and nobody may want it.
Yeah, I wish I would have thought of this 20 years ago.
Yeah, if I would have known in 1995 they were free and if I knew how to do it, there's a lot of domains I think I would have just snatched up. And again, hindsight, you know, 2020, but it'd be nice to have even like a cars.com or books.com, you know, something simple like that, just to grab them, because you know at some point somebody's probably going to want them.
Oh, 100%. And I should have said 30 years ago. 20, not too bad, but 30 would have been much better.
Now I just need to save up to buy that coolstuffridehome.com website.
Is someone sitting on that?
I haven't even bothered to look. It's got to be out there, right?
The site can't be found, Reggie. The site can't be reached.
Oh, well, maybe I should look into that. Maybe we can buy that. Or should we go .org?
This feels like an off-the-podcast conversation.
.ru? Go with the Russian domain?
No comment.
Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Who knows? Maybe you'll find us at .com somewhere someday. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Papp. Feel free to shoot us an email, though, at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments. Also, please like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'll talk to you next week with more cool stuff.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.